Every week, the Orange Fizz team breaks down the five most pressing questions about Syracuse athletics.
Holy cow, what a big time defensive play!
No holds barred.
I pity the fool.
It's the Fizz Five.
Five!
Welcome inside the Fizz 5 podcast. Another edition here on this Tuesday afternoon. Nico Horning, Adam Gotkin here with you. Excited to break down some Syracuse sports going around right now as basketball season's wrapping up. Lacrosse season is in full effect, and we'll have it all for you right here on the Fizz 5 podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at OrangeFizz, as well as checking out our website, orangefizz.net. Our first topic has to do with Jerry McNamara possibly getting a head coaching spot somewhere else. We'll talk about it, and that's topic number one.
Number one.
All right, Jerry McNamara. It was just reported last night. Nothing's official yet, but it's all speculating towards this, that Jerry McNamara has emerged as a top target in Siena men's basketball program for head coach. Again, Nico Horning with Adam Gotkin. Adam, a move that I saw the news and I'm like, you know what? He deserves a head coaching spot. He's been at Syracuse forever. Credit to him. You know, had an amazing career, as we all know, here at Syracuse. But the fact that he now maybe is going to venture somewhere else and, you know, bring his talents elsewhere, I think for him personally, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's too much of a surprise. I mean, these rumors have been around for about a week now, but just becoming more and more substantiated as time has gone on. But he's now been an assistant coach since 2011. He's been a part of, you know, he was a manager before that. He's been a part of the staff since 2009. That is a very, very long time, almost 15 years. So you know, I think he deserves to move up in the ranks and become a head coach. I feel like there was some conversation. There were a few people who wanted him to get the head coaching job here over Autry. So I'm happy for GMAC to move on, happy for his career to continue to blossom. You know, he's done incredible things at Syracuse, of course, as a player, as a head coach, and you know, you just hope the best for him. Of course, nothing yet official, but you know, Trilly Donovan said it a week ago. You can usually trust him. Now, Jeff Goodman has been reporting it. Mike McAllister said it. A couple reporters over in Albany by Siena, so it sounds like it's pretty much locked that it's going to happen, and you know, just happy for Jerry. You know, it stinks to see him go if he does, but overall, I'm very happy for him.
Obviously, well deserved. I mean, a guy that I would have thought, you know, maybe would have had a higher position even a few years ago by now, but you know, he becomes associate head coach, you could say, after Boeheim left, and he got 1 year with Adrian Autry, and you know, of course, Autry is the one that's making all the official decisions, coaching during the game and standing up and all that. But McNamara is the number two. And you look at the way Syracuse basketball played this year, their best season since 2018. And I think a lot of that's got to be credited to McNamara because it's not just, you know, Autry putting in everything. You got him, you got Alan Griffin, you got all these coaches, you know, putting a team on the floor. And I think McNamara gets a lot of credit for that. And if he does go to Siena, which it sounds like, you know, I think he can kind of boost their program as well. So, you know, for you initially, let's kind of talk about this in the Syracuse perspective here. If McNamara does leave, Adam, I mean, what's kind of the notion that maybe Hoops fans would kind of be saying bye to if McNamara was going to go to Siena? Because, you know, there's nothing but good words about the guy, too.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because the coaching staff and the assistant coaches, it's kind of weird right now. All four guards, of course, Adrian Autry, the legendary point guard at Syracuse, Alan Griffin, he was a guard as well here, Brennan Strawn, he was a guard back when he played, and of course, so was Jerry. So the whole coaching staff was guards. Alan Griffin was the guy who's in charge of the centers, but you wonder, who does Syracuse bring in now? Do they bring in a former big man who can coach up the centers and forwards better? Do they bring in a former head coach? Do they bring in someone who's young and a talented recruiter like Strawn? I'm really interested to see what way Autry goes, because right now this is an inexperienced coaching staff. You know, we saw a lot of inexperienced coaching decisions last year with Autry in his first season as head coach. Do we see someone who popped into my mind was Danny Manning, head coach at Wake Forest for a while. He's been an assistant at Maryland and Louisville recently. One of the greatest bigs in the history of college basketball. Of course, there's no direct tie to Syracuse, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing if SU goes away from those direct ties from the alumni and bring in an experienced head coach,
exactly
a former head coach.
What I was going to bring up is I think, you know, as much as everyone at Syracuse loves to have alumni, it loves to have, you know, guys that have been around the program for a while or played for the program, I think it's more important to bring out the outsiders. I mean, you look at most of that coaching staff. I mean, you mentioned all Syracuse. So it's important to, in my opinion, go outside the realm, have some more exposure that way, and not exactly rely on Syracuse guys all the time. Even when it came down to the head coaching search after Boeheim, I thought Syracuse was going to possibly go outside and not go internally and bring in Autry up the ranks. So that move, it didn't necessarily surprise me at the start, but I thought they would have given more thought as to going outside the program. So I expect the same thing for this search as well if McNamara does indeed leave the program, but I expect there to be more of a search on the outside for an assistant coach. And it brings more, you know, I don't know if spark's the right word, but more exposure and just a different perspective from a Syracuse brand of basketball.
Yeah, and you wonder, if they do go outside, is the focus on recruiting or not, like I just said? Because right now, if you look at the coaches that you have right now, Strawn is your DMV connection. So is Autry. I mean, they both have the DMV connections. Alan Griffin, he's from New York City, so he's your New York connection. Do you want to go somewhere else and find another hotbed, like a guy from Philly? Is there anything behind that? Or is the coach that Syracuse...
Hey, I'm from California. Let's
maybe
bring
in someone from even
further.
Maybe
another Chris Bell out there.
Maybe, but is the focus going to be in-game coaching and the focus going to be someone who's experienced? I think that's the question. I think that's the route that I would want to see Syracuse go, bring in an experienced big man. I mean, I honestly think that Danny Manning could be a great pick for the job. Yes, he struggled at Wake Forest in the past. Yes, there's no connection, but he's a guy who's recruited very well in the past. He has all the experience. He's been a head coach in the ACC. I think that someone like him, an experienced guy who can coach the bigs up really well, is what this team needs, because Autry and Griffin and Strong can all work with the guards. You know, yes, Alan Griffin has been coaching centers recently, but he isn't one. And we've seen, you know, of course, Jesse Edwards progressed, and there's been a couple guys who have progressed really well, but we've also seen some issues with the big men in the past recently. So I think there's a big question around that of what do the Orange do? We'll see. You know, there's a lot of other questions around this Syracuse team, but you know, this is one that I don't think many people were expecting at the end of the season. I think a lot of people thought, I probably thought, if Jerry was going to leave, it would have been last year. It would have been when Boeheim left, not for him to stay another year and then go. I don't think there's any animosity between him and Autry. I don't think there's any reason to think that there's anything wrong with it other just than the fact that there's a head coaching spot opening up in upstate New York. It's a perfect fit for Jerry McNamara. He's been living in this area for so long. He has all the connections in this area. I think it's a good fit for him, and I think it's best for him to take it.
Jerry McNamara, again, reportedly taking over Siena's men's college basketball program as head coach. We'll see if and find out if that happens. You know, maybe when we post this podcast, it'll be official, but we'll find out if that indeed goes through. Again, Jerry McNamara going to Siena as head coach. Another basketball team that, you know, I think the men's team had success this season, but the women's team was the team to watch, the better team. And they had a run into March Madness, which resulted in a loss last night to UConn. And that is topic number two.
Number two.
Well, coming off a 72-64 Syracuse women's basketball loss to UConn last night. And before we dive into this matchup, Adam, I mean, what a season for Coach Felicia Leggett-Jack's squad overall. But you know, I want to look at last night in particular at the entertainment aspect of that game. Syracuse could have easily faltered down, 15 or so if De'Asia Fair doesn't do her thing and draw the Orange back into that game. They made it exciting down the stretch, and it was a really, really good game on ESPN. A lot of exposure for Syracuse. You know, you fall short of UConn, but you got to respect the fight. And if I'm me, I got a good feeling about this team after the offseason. Obviously, you lose De'Asia Fair, which is, you know, essentially a huge part of your team. But for a loss last night to take place the way it did, I'm more than happy.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to get into it now, but I think that there's a lot of stuff to worry about moving forward as you lose Fair. But
yes, you're
right on it. With just the fight that this team showed, there were multiple times in that game where Syracuse could have just sat down and taken the defeat. Times in the second quarter when they went down 10 points, in the fourth quarter when they went down big. But every single time this team went down, they fought back. And that's really all that you can ask for at the end of the day. We've talked about the makeup of this team, how, you know, the lack of a true second and third option was going to hurt them. This squad played without Elena Rice, the third leading scorer in this game, because she suffered a concussion against Arizona. So you factor that in as well, that Syracuse was without one of its starters, and still to just lose by 8 to UConn, the perennial powerhouse in women's basketball, to make it a two-point game with under 2 minutes to go. You know, of course, the season comes to an end, but in a women's tournament where we've seen so few upsets, just one upset in the entire first round, I think you come out of it just saying we should be proud of this team and proud of how they fought and proud of the season in general.
We were on this podcast a couple weeks ago, kind of previewing the Syracuse women's basketball team heading into the tournament after the regular season. We knew they lost 3 of their last 4 games. But the big question was, who in the world was going to step up besides De'Asia Fair? And I think in the win over Arizona, funny enough, you know, the rest of the squad kept them in it, but it was Fair who won the game down the stretch. Scored the last, 13 points of regulation and got Syracuse another game. That was incredible. Then you fast forward to UConn last night in the second round of the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament, and you had others step up, and De'Asia Fair was kind of limited, especially in that first half. I think, I want to say maybe 5 points in the first half when Syracuse as a team scored more than, I'm trying to find the totals right now, but point being, more players stepped up in the first half when Fair wasn't going, and the team was only down by 6 points. At that point, I was like, boy, you're in a great spot against UConn if your other players are stepping up and Fair is pretty much getting stopped. And then, of course, you know, she got going in the second half and made it a really fun game. But credit to the others who stepped up last night. Sophie Burrows, Georgia Woolley being those big two, finally came out the way I'd want to see them most of the season, but at least it happened now.
Yeah, it was a shame because, you know, you just said it. We were saying who's going to step up, who's going to be the second and third options. Well, Syracuse had those second and third options, 18 points from Burrows and Woolley, but it was after that. It was the fourth, the fifth off the bench where everything just fell apart because outside of those three, it was Alyssa Latham with 6, Sanaya Wilson with 2, and no one else scored. I mean, you can't win basketball games like that because in the first round game against Arizona, as you said, De'Asia Fair took over in the end, but also Kennedy Perkins scored 8, and Kyra Wood added on 5. Alyssa Latham, she had 10, and you know Elena Rice scored a couple buckets. So you had those points as well from everyone else. In this game, it was really just Burrows and Woolley at the start, the two Australians. Towards the end, Fair finally seemed to pick it up. But you know, it was that issue of Syracuse, when De'Asia Fair got shut down, offensively just didn't have enough to supplement it because, you know, even though Burrows and Woolley stepped up, what about the other two on the floor? The bigs were just dominated in this game. I mean, the rebounding wouldn't show it. Syracuse just gives up one more rebound than it gets, loses the rebounding battle 37-36. But the bigs limited to just 6 points total, Latham 6 and Kyra Wood 0.
So I'm not going to go against your point, but to point out how good UConn is, I mean, they play 6 players, but they mainly stick with their starting 5, and 4 of those starting 5 players had at least double digits. It's remarkable. I mean, they are just the powerhouse, and you know, I know they're not a 1 seed this year, but this team is so good. Paige Beckers was just ballistics last night, and the other point I wanted to bring up was kind of the shooting discrepancies that took place. UConn shot 50%. Syracuse shot just 33%. So I think it was a lot of credit to the defense as well. UConn had some late turnovers, and Syracuse, more importantly, I think is a better way to put it, they got more stops later on, and De'Asia Fair and others took that to heart and scored on the other end. That's what got him to get back in the game. But to me, I mean, this is a UConn team that just got the better of Syracuse last night. And for the Orange, you know, tip your hats, fought back, battled back, and now a lot of questions, obviously, with De'Aja Fair leaving.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's UConn is just simply yeah. a better team than Syracuse. You know, the Orange shot just 30% from the field, 33%, but that's because UConn is so good on the defensive end that Syracuse was having to put up bad shots, was having to rush, and that's what happens when you play a powerhouse like UConn, especially in an atmosphere like that. You're on the road in the NCAA tournament, makes it so much harder. And the Orange, just at the end of the day, ran into one of the best programs in the history of the sport and couldn't hold on.
Well, UConn will take on Duke on Saturday night, so that should be a fun game, as well as that women's tournament is still rolling on. A really close game between Iowa and West Virginia last night, by the way. Iowa, I mean, they were tied with 2 minutes to go. I was watching that live. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is a close one. You know, I was talking to some friends the other day. I'm like, if Caitlin Clark was to exit this tournament early, how not only shocking, but just like, you know, the fact that everyone's grasped onto her as a basketball fan. I mean, for her to leave that early in the tournament, that would have been a shock last night.
Nuts.
But it was a good game. So basketball season is over in Syracuse. So now we kind of focus on the offseason coming up and some transfers that will take place. And that is topic number three.
Number three.
Well, both basketball seasons are done at SU, and now it's time to turn the attention to the offseason again, and more importantly, the transfers that could come in or what Syracuse is looking for. And Adam, I'm just going to ask you right off the bat, you know, we'll start with the men's side of basketball for sure. What is your biggest lack of position that takes place on that team right now?
I think that there's two. I think you need a true point guard, and I think you need a center. The thing that worries me right now is if you look at the guys that it seems like Syracuse has offered so far in the portal, at least the players that when you see your Joe Tiptons and those type of portal experts tweeting out saying this is the interest they're receiving, seems like everyone that Syracuse has reached out to is a combo guard, shooting guard, or like a power forward. I don't understand it so far. Like the centers that you see, blanking on his name completely, but the guy from Rutgers who is most likely going to St. John's, Syracuse didn't reach out to. Josh Cohen from UMass, it sounds like Syracuse didn't reach out to. So I don't understand, you know, what is Syracuse looking out for right now? What is Syracuse looking for at the moment? Because to me, there's a need for a point guard. Syracuse did not have a true point guard this year, and it really hurt them on offense. The set offense was not good because of the lack of that true point guard. It was a bunch of combo guards, and you can't necessarily win that many games like that. And then the center, of course. We talked about it time and time again about how Malik Brown is incredible, but he's a four. From everything that we've seen from the guys it sounds like Syracuse is interested in, it sounds like they're going to run it back with having a small ball, maybe playing Malik Brown and Donnie Freeman both in the lineup, but those are two fours. So I don't understand what's going on right now in the portal. It's weird because there's still so much time in the portal. Guys can enter a week late. Guys can still enter the portal 2 weeks from now, and it doesn't mean anything. There's still so many teams that are still playing postseason basketball. It's all just chaos. It's all crazy. It's hard to know how to feel, but I think that there are still holes in the Syracuse team, and there's guys who potentially could fill those holes. And it doesn't seem like Syracuse is necessarily interested.
It's a weird spot to be in. And, you know, just to back it up a little bit, we've kind of talked about this on the podcast, but the whole transfer thing is just interesting. And it's a new brand of college athletics, I think, is just kind of the way to put it. A lot of question marks that take place throughout the offseason. You don't really get your answers until later on. You know, guys can go to the most unexpected place that people might not, you know, think that they would go to, rather than just a natural professional trade. So it'll be weird to see what happens this offseason, especially with those positions. This team needs a dang center. I mean, that's kind of the top need of this team right now. I mean, Nyheim McLeod played half a season, didn't really impress given his size. Credit to Malik Brown, the way he withstood the position for a while, and Syracuse got some wins down the stretch of the season. But this team needs a center, and you need someone like Jesse Edwards that produced for you pretty much every night. And, you know, maybe he wasn't super flashy all the time, but he did his thing. And I think Syracuse fans are now realizing that, oh my gosh, I kind of miss Jesse, right? So, you know, you need someone like that going forward. And then you get into the guard situation. And what do you think Judah Mintz is going to do?
Yeah.
Is that like really up in the air right now? Because, I mean, I haven't, you know, seen really anything going on. Obviously, basketball's still going on in the tournament and everything. You know, is he considering the draft again? Does he come back again? What do you think is the notion on him? What do you expect him to do? What do you want him to do? And I don't know. How does he play that again? Because it feels like last year.
It feels like it's going to be the exact same thing as last year again. I mean, I've said this before. Judah Mintz is an incredible player. He's very, very good. People give him a lot more hate than he deserves. But I think Syracuse is better off if he moves on, because Syracuse's offense right now and Syracuse's roster makeup right now is built around so many players who play the exact same style of basketball, who play the exact same position. Judah, JJ, Chance Westry, Kyle Cuff, Elijah Moore, all of these guys are shooting guards, combo guards. They are not point guards. Syracuse needs a point guard. JJ Starling is staying here. Elijah Moore is staying. Those should be your two shooting guards for next year. Those should be the two guys that you lock into the number two spot. I don't think you can go into another season with Judah Mintz as your point guard, because we've already seen it before, and we've seen how it doesn't look great. And also, Syracuse needs a guard who can shoot the three consistently, because J.J. Starling didn't prove that he can do that, and Elijah Moore might come off the bench and do it, but you need a starting guard who can do it. There's no world in which you can trust Judah Mintz. He shot in the 20% this year. J.J. is not a pure three-point shooter. Syracuse needs a point guard who can shoot the three, and I think that that's what can elevate this team to the next level, and if they don't get that, then we're in the exact same spot as last year. If Judah Mintz comes back, this team is in the exact same spot as last year. If they bring in another combo guard, they're in the exact same spot. Syracuse needs a true point guard who can facilitate the offense and can also shoot threes. And if they don't get that, then I don't see that bright of a future for next season.
I mean, the three-point shooting is everything right now, I think, in the game. And, you know, let's say Mintz does come back. They need a center. Like, that's, to me, that is the number one necessity that the team needs this offseason, because you don't know what Mintz is going to do. And if you have that center to rely on, well, that alleviates that part of things. And even if you don't get a true point guard, you can kind of...
Then you can run with JJ at point guard,
yeah,
and have
fine.
Like Chance Westry, Elijah Moore, trust the rest of those guys.
My point is, you can still be a little bit flexible at that position.
Yeah, absolutely.
More so than the true center spot. Syracuse got away with Malik Brown, you know, fulfilling that role this year. But there were still a lot of lapses, especially against teams that had really good centers, where it showed.
So let's say Judah does come back.
All right.
Then what's the line? This is the starting lineup next year. Right now look like Judah, JJ, Chris Bell, Donnie Freeman, Malik Brown. I mean, then you have two shooting guards, two power forwards, and a small forward who can really just shoot the three and not do that much else. I mean, like that's not a team that's going to match up well against anyone.
No.
That's the exact same issues as last year, except you put in Donnie Freeman for Justin Taylor. So, I mean, you're a bigger team, but the issues are still there with three-point shooting. You know, the issues are still there in the fact that you don't have guys who you can truly trust with the ball in their hands. It's the exact same issues as last season, because yes, Donnie Freeman's bigger, but he's also not a big who's going to match up well necessarily with, you know, your big powerful centers. That's still going to be the exact same matchup problem for SU if Judah comes back, which is why I think if Judah doesn't come back, they don't even get a point guard, but they get a center. I think you can find your way, because matter what, you're going to have multiple guards in there. I think if anything, there's a lot more talent with the guards right now than there is with the centers. So I'd rather see them bring in a center and deal with the guards where it is now. That's what I'd much rather see.
I'm with you on that. Center priority number one, guards number two. We'll see what Judah Mintz does in the offseason here after Syracuse men's basketball season. And, of course, Syracuse women's basketball falling to UConn last night, and their season is over. All right, we're done with Hoops Talk, and we're going to wrap up our final couple of topics here on the Fizz 5 podcast. Again, Nico Horning, Adam Gotkin here with you. We are recording this on a Tuesday afternoon, a beautiful day in Syracuse. Men's lacrosse, a weekend win over Hobart, and a huge matchup coming up this weekend. That's topic number four.
Number four.
Well, Adam, a 13-7 snowy, cold, variable win over Hobart on Saturday. Just a weird one that they got through. Of course, got the win. Had to, you know, one of those games you could call a trap game, right?
Absolutely a trap game. Yeah, I think so.
You know, it's, yes, you've won whatever straight games now, won the Krause-Simmons Trophy, all of that. But every year that one comes up and it's like, you kind of have to take care of business, and those can be the hard ones. It's kind of like relating Syracuse to Colgate for basketball, which, boy, that is not turned out in Syracuse's favor, you know, consistently in a while. Of course, they got the win this year. But it can relate to that. Now you got to focus on the top-ranked team in the country against Notre Dame on Saturday on the road. Biggest test of the season. Your first thoughts.
Oof, it's going to be one heck of a game in South Bend. You just said it there. Number one against number three. Syracuse hasn't beaten Notre Dame in a very long time. Syracuse hasn't beaten Notre Dame on the road since 2017. Fun thing then, Notre Dame was ranked number one in the country. Syracuse was number three in the country then.
Wow.
But it's going to be a tough matchup for the Orange, who have played horribly against Notre Dame recently. Blew a awful lead last year, got blown out the year before, but this is a different Syracuse team than those years before. You said it there, getting past Hobart was big without Owen Hiltz as well. In the snow, he had a lower body injury, so because of that, just precautionary, they kept him out. Now we'll see what this team can do against Notre Dame. This is the test. This is it. This is by far, I think, the biggest test of the year. It's a bigger test than Hopkins or Maryland or Army because this is a true road game. This is the second true road game of the season for this team after just Hobart. And we'll see how they do. I'll be there. I'm heading to South Bend Thursday night, so it should be a lot of fun. And I can't wait for it. I think that this is, you know, everything you could ask for and more in a lacrosse game.
Well, there's differences between a road test and a home test, right? We've seen it a couple instances this season. Let's start with the road test. And, you know, you had a game against Johns Hopkins. Now, yes, it was a neutral site, but you're still not playing at home. And, you know, you may not be in a super road environment, but still a really good Hopkins team, top five. You won by one. All right. You take that. And then you kind of take what you have at home, and that was a really dominant win over Duke. That wasn't even close, really, for the most part. So you kind of got to balance how you're looking at things going into this Notre Dame game. And you're right that, you know, a lot of the season kind of depends on this one game this weekend. But I don't think that we can overlook the past few ranked wins that Syracuse has had necessarily. Of course, you know, if this team came out of South Bend with a win over the top-ranked team in the country, you know, everyone's floating high and all that. But if they lose and they put up a good fight, I don't think that should be taken necessarily as a bad thing.
It's not the end of the world if they lose whatsoever. I mean, if you lose on the road against the number one team in the country, what are you supposed to do there? But the thing is I think that the Duke win isn't as good as some people make it out to be, because I don't think that Duke is that good of a team necessarily. I mean, yes, that squad just beat Denver on Sunday, but the offense, once again, did not look good. So I don't think that Duke is that great. The Delaware win was very good. The Hopkins win was very good, but you know, Hopkins has struggled since then. Hopkins lost to Navy. So I think those wins are good.
Notre Dame is a different test. Notre Dame is a different monster.
This is a team that won the national championship last year that brings back almost everyone from a national championship team. Arlotta Stadium is one of the harder places to play in the country. There are very few places that are an atmosphere like Arlotta with the bagpipes and everything with that, and it being, you know, a long flight to South Bend. I think that there is a lot of stuff behind that. And I think that if Syracuse wins this game, it truly puts any and all doubters to sleep. You cannot doubt this team anymore, because you know, I think that there are Hopkins hasn't looked as good recently. Duke's offense, what in the world is going on with it? There's no, Notre Dame isn't good. Notre Dame is, everyone agrees, a great team. I think if you beat Notre Dame, you're there. And you are officially back. And if Syracuse beats Notre Dame, the Orange are going to be number one in the country next week. Without a doubt, I think they jump over Virginia. They'd have better wins, yes, two losses, but they would have beaten Hopkins, Duke, and Notre Dame. That would have been three top five wins. There's no way but to put them number one in the country. And I think because of that, it would be a massive win. Now, if they lose, they lose. Whatever, you move on to Cornell. You play the number seven team in the country on Tuesday. So you got a quick turnaround again on the road. If you lose, it's whatever. You turn to the next one. But if you win, I think that it's truly time to say that this is a real national title contender. Because I don't know if we're necessarily there just yet. I think that this is still a young team. It's a young team that's achieving. But I don't necessarily know if we're at that national title tier. I think we're maybe one little step below that. We're at like Final Four. I think if this team wins, though, then we're at national title talk.
Big time. And, you know, we've talked about the face-offs this year that have been better. We talk about the offense has had more options than just Joey Spallina. I think that's been the huge thing about this team. But the defense, too, is really, you know, might be the most noticeable, you know, aspect to Syracuse so far. The fact that you only allow four goals to Duke, you know, you're playing pretty solid defense for the most part. And you talk about a guy like Will Mark, who doesn't necessarily have to have the volume of shots that he usually gets on net. And I think that's helped him out. But, you know, there's still certain cases where that could, in fact, turn out to be harder because he's not seeing that volume of shots. He has to react a little bit you know, less, but quicker, so he's not exactly as used to the ball coming. You know, I never played lacrosse, so I don't know if that's, you know, a huge factor, but you kind of get what I'm saying, where you get a rhythm with the volume of shots. If you're not getting the volume of shots, well, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I think this Saturday, you know, Notre Dame could be that team to put the volume of shots on net, of course, but is Will Mark used to that like he was last year? If you have last year's Will Mark in this game, I think Syracuse wins. I don't know about this year.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. The Orange have not played an offense like Notre Dame this year with the Kavanaughs, Chris and Pat, two of the best players in that program's history, and Jake Taylor as well, who scored seven goals against Michigan in the Irish's last game. Jake Taylor has destroyed Syracuse every single time he's played the Orange. He had, I think it was like eight goals when these teams played 2 years ago. He scored a bunch last year as well. So it's can Syracuse stop Jake Taylor? That's the question. Jordan Faison, the two-way player, he was one of the top receivers on Notre Dame on the football team as a walk-on. He's just a freshman. He's been really good so far in the lacrosse season as well. So, you know, can Syracuse stop Notre Dame's offense, or at least slow down Notre Dame's offense? That's the question. You know, there's a lot of doubts about, you know, they've played great recently, but you played Delaware and Hobart, and then in between that, Dukes, whose offense has looked completely just anemic recently. So, you know, this is a real test again, and it's a big one because after this, I just mentioned it quickly, but you play Cornell, who has one of, if not maybe you can argue, the most dynamic offense in the country in a CNY showdown a week from today for us. So, you know, I think this is a huge test. Again, I said this before, but if Syracuse loses, it's not the end of the world. It's whatever. They'll move on. But if they win, I think we're talking national title.
Well, it should be a fun game on Saturday. Enjoy that one in person. Take that in. Should be a great environment over there in South Bend. And we'll see what happens. You know, an exciting product to watch so far this year going up against the top team in the country. Syracuse, Notre Dame men's lacrosse on Saturday. The next and final topic here has to do with the women's side of things in lacrosse. Kind of sandwiched right now in between a couple of really important games. They got the win on Saturday, but now they have a really important test on Wednesday, tomorrow, number 7, Loyola. We'll talk about that and finish things off with topic number 5.
Number 5.
Well, Adam, Coach Trainer's squad coming off a one-goal win over 9th-ranked Virginia on Saturday on the road. Now you come back home and you gear up for another top 10 team in Loyola. I just spoke with head coach Jen Adams yesterday, and you know she's got her team ready for tomorrow. And I think this is going to be an important test for Syracuse going forward. You know, really a nationally televised game, ESPNU, and whenever you have these games in the dome, you know it gets a little timid in there, and sometimes you can't control that, but sometimes you can. And I think, you know, just like the men's side, this is kind of a make or break game for this team, at least right now at this point in the season.
Yeah, this is a huge one. This is a squad that really did struggle at the start of the year, 3-3 to start things off, losing to Northwestern, Maryland, and then Stony Brook. But since then, 4 wins in a row, a 15-point victory against North Carolina, one of the best teams in the history of the sport. And then to come back and beat UVA on the road the way that this squad did back on Saturday was really impressive, to get go on a 3-0 run at the very end to finish things off, to not give up any goals in the final 14 minutes to get the victory on the road just says so much about this Syracuse team and so much about how this defense has really improved as the year has gone on. It's not going to be easy against Loyola, one of the best defenses in the country, a team that gave Syracuse some real issues last year. I mean, that was maybe SU's closest call during the undefeated run before they lost in the final regular season game against Boston College during that magical start. Loyola was the toughest test, so you know, we'll see how the Orange can do this year. It's not going to be easy. As you said, it's weird, 4 p.m. on a Wednesday. You know, what's the environment like in there? Is a quiet dome an upset factory? We'll see. But you know, this is a team that's got to come out firing. It's a team that can't rely on a late comeback like against Virginia to win another game. You can't put yourself in that situation again. You got to, like the UNC game, step on the gas and go full throttle until you dominate, because a squad like Loyola is really frisky, and if you're down by one going into the fourth quarter, down by two going into the fourth quarter, things can get really messy.
Yeah, this is a game where, you know, I think Loyola is just the team that's going to come in hungry, because you lost by 2 goals last year to Syracuse. And, you know, this is tough to compare, but, you know, for the men's side, I compare that Hobart game to a trap game. This, to me, is a bit of a trap game, even though
it's different because Loyola is a lot better than Hobart.
Exactly. But my whole point is, you know, the time of this game, the location of this game, for whatever reason, just feels a little off. And the fact that you kind of left it all on the turf against Virginia leads me to believe that if Syracuse doesn't come out firing, they're done in this game. That's kind of where I'm coming from for tomorrow. Yeah. I don't know if there's much more to look into it.
I think I see where you're coming from there because it's a weird game. You're in the middle of ACC play and then you go play a non-conference team, and you know, quickly, Loyola's a very good squad. 9-0 on the season, mm-hmm. number 7 in the country, wins against number 10, 12, 25, and 18 in the rankings. So, you know, haven't necessarily played a team at the level of Syracuse yet, but Loyola's dominated pretty much all of the, you know, lower teams that it's played, has beaten some of those ranked squads very convincingly, beat ranked Navy by 5, beat a ranked Florida team by 8. So, you know, Loyola is by no means a pushover. Syracuse is going to have to play its A game if it wants to come out on top. It cannot be caught sleeping.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Chase Boyle, Sidney Black, you know, Georgia Lech, the list goes on and on for Loyola. I mean, very, very good offensive team as well. You mentioned their defense, but just a really well-rounded squad. That'll be tomorrow, Wednesday, 4 o'clock, number 7, Loyola, and number 5, Syracuse. So tune in to that one for sure. Should be a fun one. Saturday, of course, Notre Dame and Syracuse men's lacrosse. So a couple of really exciting lacrosse matchups to watch out for, and it should be a fun rest of the way the next month or so. But that'll about wrap it up here on the Fizz 5 podcast. Again, Nico Horning, Adam Gotkin here with you. Be sure to check out the website, orangefizz.net, and follow us on Twitter at orangefizz as well for all of your Syracuse athletics content. We'll have it for you. And thanks again for tuning into the Fizz 5 podcast. Enjoy the rest of your week.
And that's your Fizz 5. Listen next week. Subscribe, rate, and review. This has been an Orange Fizz production.